From Digitiki.com.
Oh, yes, sir. I'd like to have two Mai Tais. Make them double and heavier in the rum.
Right away, sir.
Just a moment. What do you want, son?
Well, I'll just have one of yours, Pop.
You can't have one of my Mai Tais. You have to have one of your own, your Tais. Give him his Tais.
Welcome to the Quiet Village.
Welcome back. We are continuing on with our Midday Mai Tais release spectacular part two. I am here with Darren Long of the Tiki Delights, Mike Young of Mr. Mawai and the Tiki Heads, and of course Jeremy DeHart, aka Kane Manakura of the Manakuras and the Aqualads and the whole bunch of different bands, and of course myself. And we all came together to collaborate on a record called Midday Mai Tais, which we are talking about. So I hope you heard part one. If you didn't, go back and check it out. We're continuing now with part two.
At that point, Darren, you were very, very nice about this. You know, I had one part of your song where I was like, I really feel like we should do this. And you're like, all right, let's change it. And you changed it, you know, which was great. And then on the flip side, you said something about rainbows and Kaneohe. And I was like, well, that's kind of how I wrote it. So, you know, sort of feel like a dick.
You know, it is true. And that's something I want the listeners to understand is we didn't just write the song and give the charts to everybody and they played their parts. We actually collaborated because I remember I was playing parts and you guys were coming back like, what if you cut instead of doing this, go to this section here instead? And it was like, it's much better that way.
Yeah, like in that one song you did that I was like, I said, no, you need to extend. I can't remember what song it was because it's not on my list right here, but we're not playing it, I don't think, at the show, but it's on the album. Which one was that? And there was this pause. And I said, you know what? You need to do this section again because it's so good that it'll draw people in. And then you take that one part and you have that break and you say, let that just hang there for a while and then come back in.
Yeah.
It'll just have a.
It was very collaborative.
It evolved.
Yeah.
All the songs kind of evolved in their own thing.
Which is why I was really interested how this began. And I didn't know, you know, that basically, you know, and I guess what I understand from the beginning of this conversation is Darren had just kind of came out of you and it was just sort of this. You guys were all together.
Yeah, we're hanging out.
And said, we should all collaborate. But then it sort of came from Darren, and then the thing evolved in terms of like, well, we're going to do more songs now. We're going to do a whole album.
Like you said, it started as, you know, hey, let's cross promote and let's just do a collaboration with basically our, you know, already released songs. And then it just turned into this, no, let's just write original music for this whole thing.
And I will say, it was very alcohol fueled. We were at Rory's. We were at Rory's home bar in Palm Springs.
Where anything is possible.
So I'm actually drinking out of a Rory Snyder's Lahaina Room Mai Tai glass. And I got to say, you have to be very special, I think, to get one of these glasses because he's got his home bar. And if you go there and sign his guest book, if you're lucky enough to be invited there and sign his guest book, he gives you a commemorative Rory Snyder's Lahaina Room in glass. And Rory, of course, is the organizer of Tiki Kalianti, right?
Tiki Kal and the owner of the Reef Bar.
Reef. Not only the Reef, but Sancho's.
Sancho's.
By the way, when I was in Sancho's and Darren and I were eating there, I had one of the best margaritas I've ever had and one of the biggest fajita plates in my life.
Yeah, which was amazing. High end, if I remember right. Yeah. I said, you don't want to order that. There's a lot of food.
And I know. And the margarita was phenomenal. And he's got another one too, right? The Fern?
The Fern Bar, it's the little bar right next to Sancho's.
Yeah.
He changed the theme. Now it's part of Sancho's Cantina.
Oh, I was going to say, maybe you should have called it Between Two Ferns.
Between Two Ferns.
You know, we didn't even go in that bar.
No, we didn't.
We did. Well, we can in May. I mean, listeners to the show for me probably already know how I got into tiki. You know, I'll just give you the postage stamp version. When I was 5 years old, I found my mother's Arthur Lyman record. It was Bahia. And if you play that first track, which is Bahia, it is exotic as hell. It starts out with the bird calls and just the bass going doom, 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 doom. And the bird calls all over the place. And for a 5 year old boy, it was like,
oh gosh, yeah.
Wow. What is, I played that record over and over and over.
Cool.
And that's how I got into it. And, I had always been interested in tiki music from that point on, because it literally, exactly what everybody says, it transported me in my head to this exotic jungle, you know. Yeah. And it was amazing, and that kind of stuck with me my whole life. And I, you know, of course, as a teenager in my early 20s, I got out of that, I went into other things, but then I came back to the whole tiki thing and discovered that there were other people in it too, that they were also into it. And when I got into it hard in 2000, and at that point there really was hardly anybody making the music. I think Y Tiki was the only one, and then of course Tikiaki came together, and I helped you know with that. But at that point there was hardly anybody.
Combustible Edison.
Combustible Edison, yes.
Oh yeah, you used their one of their songs as your theme for many years on your podcast.
I did. I love that record.
Because you know, I discovered your podcast right after Tikiaki Orchestra Bass in probably 2007 or 2008. Mm-hmm. And I started following your podcast back like 20 some years ago, right?
Yeah, it's been a while, yeah.
I know, you know, but that's a credit to you. You've kept it going and it's still going, and here we are. I'm on your podcast. I never would have thought. I'm looking back at the day thinking, you know, I'm just loving this shit. Excuse me.
Yeah, that's all right.
And then all of a sudden I'm like, I'm on your podcast and I'm collaborating with you on music. I mean, this pinched me because I never, ever thought I'd be in this position musically. You know, I mean, this is just my dream come true. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I've done everything.
And I, you know, I want to touch on that too, just briefly. I don't want to hog the conversation, but I do want to touch on that. Collaboration to me from day one of being a musician has always been very important, because like Jeremy said, it expands your horizon. Your world gets bigger when you start collaborating with other people. And I remember when I was still young in my 20s and I wanted to be a jazz musician. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting down with some friends who were much better player than me. And I got my ass kicked, but it was exhilarating at the same time. It was like just in that one or two songs of them mopping the floor up with me and my pathetic chops, my world expanded like exponentially. And it was like, yes, I am going to learn this. I'm going to, you know, and it really was wonderful. And collaboration musically, I have said this before, and I mean this as a pun, no man is an island, you know. Yeah. And whenever we collaborate musically with other people, we always get something out of it. Everybody gets something out of it.
Yeah. That's a good point. Very good. I totally agree. You know, that same story for me, Mark, you'll love this. My father used to play riverboat banjo, so it's four string plectrum, right? And my uncle played tuba.
Okay, I got it.
And they would play these ancient songs from, you know, Tin Pan Alley and all that stuff, right? You know, from the turn of the century. And I'd sit there on my guitar, like, trying to play along. And they're playing all this stuff. And I'm like, what the hell chord is that? You know, just over and over, like, you know, banging my head against it. And that really got me into playing music, basically. It's like, you know, I can play this chord, but it's not the right chord. Why is that? You know, and I just, it's true. Like collaboration is the thing that I think expands all this stuff. And I was going to ask you too, you know, what do you think about the concept of the bird calls being the thing that like really resonates with people in terms of exotica?
I, you know, it's interesting because, you know, obviously that's very unique. And I, my thought is it helps transport people. It brings, to use a lack of a better term, it brings the outside inside.
Uh-huh.
You hear a piece of music and it can mean different things to different people. But when you hear waves and you hear birds, it suddenly you're like, I am someplace else for sure. It just takes it up.
And you're not in a cold place.
You're not in a cold place, right? You know, it's, I think it just helps take it one more notch up to.
Yeah. And I think as a child too, you know, you experiencing that Arthur Lyman, it's mm-hmm. just so shocking in a sense. You kind of are like, this is music. Why is there a bird song?
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know what I mean?
Well, birds are musical. You know, I mean, think about it. Everything's musical.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's move on. Let's play one of your tunes, Mike. Let's do, this is Pineapple Paradise from the Midday Mai Tais record. Thank you.
Hey, you know, hey, Jeremy, so your dad played banjo? Is that right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, well, that's cool. You know, Tommy Emmanuel once said, he goes, you know what the difference is between a banjo and an onion? No one ever cried when they cut up a banjo. Yeah,
sure. I know. Wow. So it was a phenomenal sort of like guitar level instrument at one point. That's really kind of what my father played. It was like, it's crazy. You think of like a 4-string banjo as being a small one, but They have one that's a regular size. They call it a knee-high plectrum because you play it with a pick. You don't play it with a bunch of finger picks, you know.
I don't hear banjo in Exotica. I just don't.
There have been some albums with banjo in Exotica. There you go.
I'm sorry.
Well, and I'm
country a little bit too. Keith a little bit of country. Played a 6-string banjo on one of his tunes.
Yeah,
oh, crazy.
Pretty rocking, but it's.
Well, I will say that my thought for this album, for my three songs again, was that whole. I just took that whole Midday Mai Tai, and I just imagined the idea, literally, of what. What we talked about is finding this white sandy beach in the middle of the day. There's nobody there. So that's one thing I did want to say. There's a track on the record called Lonely Beach. And I didn't mean that negatively.
I love that song.
And I meant lonely as in you're the only one there. And that's a good thing. So I don't want the listeners.
Lonely.
Yeah. I don't want the listeners to think it's like, it's
that's
depressing.
Song with that little break, you know, that just kind of hangs there and then brings you back in. It's
a
beautiful song. Beautiful.
Yeah. And that was the idea with that is like you're just laying in your hammock strumming on there's nobody there. And I kind of extended that with Lazy Hammock, and Darren is the one who brought this to me. All my songs on this record start with an L.
Oh, I didn't think of that, but you're right.
And I never thought about it.
I thought you did that intentionally.
I didn't, no.
Maybe it's L for libation.
Yeah, there you go.
Now the next album can be M for my time.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah, you're thinking.
But Lazy Hammock was one that I started.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this. It's probably going to tick off a few people who are hardcore Exotica. But I kind of started with the idea of Jimmy Buffett.
Oh, yeah.
And that idea of, you know, you're barefoot and you're a beach bum. And I thought of what would you be doing? And literally, I had this in my head. You're laying in the hammock with one leg hanging off, one leg dangling off, and you got your ukulele here and you're swinging back and forth. And what do? You come up with this riff that's super easy, almost ridiculously happy, and you just kind of go with it. I didn't sit there and go, oh, I'm going to do like 9 chords and 13s, and it's going to.
It's funny you mentioned that, Jimmy.
Just three chords 100 times.
3 chord song.
Yeah. I'm a huge Jimmy Buffett fan. He got me into playing guitar. I owe him actually for my guitar playing. And because that's how I learned how to play guitars from Jimmy Buffett music. And, you know, there's the whole controversy of is Jimmy Buffett tiki? Is he not tiki? Whatever. Who cares, right?
Who cares?
You like it, you like it. And it's islandy, and it takes you. It's escapism, but which song? I think it's Tears for the Island. You'll hear some Jimmy Buffett in there. Matter of fact, when I was writing and I was coming up with the riff, I was like, I think I've heard this before somewhere. I'm like, I think this is like the Manana song or whatever that Jimmy Buffett has. I think I got to change it a little bit.
You know, I look at it like cooking. You know. Yeah. It's sort of like, I don't want to use any of these seasonings because they're not right for the meal.
Well, that's
kind of like, what if you did? You know, are you really going to, is it really going to destroy things or is it going to take you somewhere new or whatever? Yeah. So, you know, I think having influences from everywhere at one time is where we're at in this world. Instant communication. You can YouTube a video that was taken today in Bangkok and just look and see what Bangkok is like.
Well, the other cool thing is you can take the most simplest chord progression
And you can make it into something really cool and complex by how you arrange it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
And your song, simplicity. Mark, was really, really simple. And,
oh,
and
it's beautiful.
I love that. It gives you such a wide sort of, you know, I mean, I just feel like I'm sitting there in that hammock.
That's yeah, exactly.
Thank you. Thank you. That was the idea, was ridiculously simple, stupid, like something that you really could just come up with while you're just laying there.
You know, Chet Atkins said that, you know, a great song has to have two things. It's got to have a really good rhythm, and it's got to have a good melody. If you got a good rhythm and a good melody, you got a great song.
Yeah.
You know, and that doesn't have to be complicated.
That's a good point.
You know?
Very good.
I have not heard that.
No, so I always try to concentrate on the melody, you know? And if you got a good melody, you got something in there that's a little bit of a hook, you know? You know, if you can't get that out of your head, you know, you hear the song and you're humming it to yourself all day. You got a good song.
Yep.
I spent 20 years writing songs in Nashville they drill that kind of stuff into you. You work with other people all the time. You're trying to write hit songs.
Right.
Tell us about that some, Darren, can you?
No. That's a whole other podcast, right?
Okay. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I would like to hear what it's like to live in Nashville and be in the music scene there. And because you hear a lot about everybody moves to Nashville to make hits and stuff.
Right. Well, like my wife, you know, we went to Nashville, Darren, and we went to that one. What's that tiki bar called?
It's got a funny name because Ken went there. I met him when he was in town when I was going to write an article for Modern Exotic and Modern. And Ken went to the opening of that
place. He went there. I don't remember the name. The drinks were really good. She's like, oh, well, you got to move to Nashville. Just start writing and just do it. I'm like, there's no way I'm doing that.
I moved here specifically for songwriting, and I kind of put performing on hold because I performed all for years in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And so I focused on that for a long time until I had a little bit of success here and there. But the music started to really change for me. I was really raised on older country, and it started to get more like rock and hip hoppy, and we're getting older too. And it's like, I'm not going to write a song for a 20-year-old kid, you know, when I'm 40 something. Right. So I kind of gravitated away from that. And that's when I started to come back to the tiki thing and also original pop music and stuff. I thought, tired of writing stupid country songs for somebody else who might record it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to write stuff for me again. I've been having a lot of fun doing the Tiki Delight stuff that I would never go back to writing country music.
Mm.
I don't have to live here, really, you know.
Mm.
But it was a great experience, so I'm glad I got it because it taught me a lot of things.
Yeah.
About song structure and things and, you know, obviously getting along with people too, because that was the thing. I'd never written songs with anybody. And then suddenly they say, you have to collaborate. And it's like, what? And it's like, you're going to meet Bob at 9 o'clock on Thursday and write a song. It's like, what if I don't feel like it?
If I don't feel like it.
You got to punch the clock and do it, you know? It's a whole different mindset.
You know?
Yeah. And so do you ever return to the old country kind of writing stuff? Did you gravitate towards that kind of music
every once in a while? Yeah, like one of my buddies is in California. We actually met here, but he's from Southern California, and he and I both grew up on Buck Owens and Johnny Cash and the old stuff. And we just started to write a song last year. We need to finish it, but I'll kind of dabble back in the old stuff. And I'm working on a project with a guy here who's he's pretty big dude. He for a long time he ran Sony Music Publishing here in Nashville, which is pretty huge.
Yeah.
Really nice guy. He loves the Beatles and he loves old country. And he came up to me one day at breakfast and he said, what do you think about writing some songs together? And I'm like, of course. When do we start? You know?
Yeah.
And so we've written like 12 songs, 12 or 13 songs. We're going to do an album.
Wow, nice.
But like the Traveling Wilburys, you remember that?
Yeah.
Love
those guys. Yeah. Country rock.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mark, maybe you could comment on this. And I don't, Mike, you, a little bit with the Aqualads, maybe. But what's your experience in regards to dealing with an internet band as opposed to a local band?
For me, I have guested on so many projects because, you know, people just don't play vibes anymore. So there's not many. So they call me and they're like, hey, would you do this? And it's always done remotely. You know, they'll send me the tracks and I'll lay it down and I'll send it back and they'll say yes or no. And, you know, we'll tweak them remotely. And it's always worked pretty well. I mean, there's a pressure that isn't there when I can just sit down and do it privately in my house
and send
it back. And if somebody says, nah, fix this one part, I can do it. I like that. The one thing I've worried a lot. Now, I don't know if you guys have heard the Leak of Lyman record that I did.
Yes.
Several years back.
Love it.
That was really more of a jazz record, a Hawaiian jazz record. I wanted to get all the guys together in one place for like 3 days and do live to multi-track.
Yeah.
And it was just scheduling. It was just impossible.
Yeah.
And so I was nervous about doing a jazzy record separately because it's so interplay. But all the guys were so good when it came together, it sounded like we really were all in the same room, not just sonically, but like thought wise. And that belayed my fears a lot of doing remote work.
Well, but what I would ask you, though, is like, what's the benefit of getting in that room with those jazz players?
It's the interplay. Yeah. It's that,
is it like the energy?
There's definitely an energy. And there's that feeling that you can, this is going to sound really technical, but when you're playing with guys in real time, you all are making these micro transactions in your brain. I'm going to give you space. I'm going to take space. I'm going to play off of what you, that little lick you just did. Yeah. And that's exhilarating.
Just even holding a note for just that microsecond longer, to get that feel and then releasing it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that scared me on the first record because I was so afraid I wasn't going to have that. And we did have it. Everybody,
you know, I think it comes through fine in the recording because I think what you can do with a recording is you can change the volume. And I think that the issue with the internet bands is that you don't get that in-person volume thing. You know what I mean by that is when you're a musician and you're playing in a room with some other musicians and everyone has their own separate volume and everyone's kind of coming together to meet, you know, that's one scenario where all these micro transactions are going on, right? Sometimes macro transactions. Someone's just like, I'm gonna be this loud, you know, or whatever. But then, you know, when we put it into our audio workstations and we can edit that and we can make that interplay, in a sense, it's sort of a, you know, as though we were as good as that in a room, you know. Yeah. And I think that's kind of maybe what we lose a little bit in not being in person together. And I'm not decrying the fact that we've been able to do this because this is phenomenal. When you step back and take a look at it, I never in a million years thought, you know, 20 years ago that this would be possible.
Yeah.
But this is phenomenal that this is possible. And I think probably Nashville has been doing this 20, 30, 40 years, however long it is, you know, phoning in your part or whatever.
They used to have to mail like reel to reel tapes back and forth back then.
You know, from a recording standpoint, I think this has been going on since multi-track recording, right?
Well, actually, Nashville's pretty much a community, though. Studios are all in one place, and these guys, the guys I used to work with, including my buddy Gene, who's in Brazil now, that's how I met him. He was a session player, sort of like in the B team. And these guys would literally just travel around all day long, studio to studio. And they do like four songs with us, and they go do another four songs with somebody else. And they all play together great.
I just think the really exciting part is you get all of us together. We've never played together. And you're going to have something, you know, brand new in a sense. And it's going to be It's always really fun. I've done this with multiple bands now. I've done this with the Amen and the Manicoras as a pure internet band, 100%.
But you guys play live a lot.
Lords of Atlantis, And you play live and you start to learn these things as well. But, you know, it's always a very dynamic situation. And I love it. I love playing in a room with other people, and I love playing on stage with other people. But I think the capabilities that we have these days of crafting music with the internet it's just phenomenal.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how things turn out when we do our live show at Tiki Caliente.
It's going
to
be great.
It'll be a blast. You know, it'll be fun to see how this all comes together.
I can virtually guarantee that each and every one of us at different points in the songs in the set are going to be like, oh, wow, I didn't think of that. I should have done that.
Exactly.
You know, the other thing too is, you know, when we do this, like you say, remotely, I can do like a bunch of drums and congas and this and that. I can do like two guitar parts and I can do a little shaker over here. And then all of a sudden we come to do it live and we whittle it down to six people. You know, I only have two hands.
I know. Yeah. There's another aspect.
We got 12 hands.
20 tracks down to six tracks.
So you got to whittle things down and you got to be selective about, okay, what am I going to leave out, you know, and still preserve the, you know, the feel of the song, you know, and the, you know, how you intended it to be.
I think it's going to be really great. I don't want to keep you guys too much longer. No, so we'll kind of wrap it up.
All right, let's do this. What's your favorite song on the album?
Oh yeah.
All right, Darren, okay. What's your favorite song on the record?
Oh, thanks, Sterling.
And it is fair to say it's your own song. It's okay.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
What's your favorite song?
I gotta pull up the record.
I don't think I have a favorite. I love them all, and I love the cover songs we're doing too, Quiet Village, and
yeah,
it fluctuates for me. I
it's all good stuff.
It fluctuates, yeah. I mean, I will say, Lazy Hammock is one of my favorites because it's just so friggin' happy.
It's good.
It's disgusting.
It's so great.
Yeah, Mike. What do you?
Well, you know, it's a mixed bag. You know, I like my song Pineapple Paradise.
Yeah,
it has a cool little hook on it that I love, and there's a little solo that I think is really fun to play. I love playing Sandy's Cove. I think it's got a really cool melody that I love. It's just fun to play. Nights in Bora Bora, where I can kind of let loose on the guitar a little bit. Senior Moai, you know. I mean, there's so many great songs. And I know the other one was Rainbows Over Kaneohe. I was intimidated by it at first because there were a lot of chord changes in that one as it steps up. And on the ukulele, you know, everything's really wild. But once I kind of figured it out, mapped it out, it's one of my favorite songs to play. I love it.
Great.
It's fun. It's challenging.
So it's hard to say what my favorite song is because I have so many that I just love to play, you know, for different reasons.
Yeah.
Mm. It is. It's a great album. I have to say, I think it's probably Lazy Hammock for me.
Oh, cool.
It's such a, you know, I get that feeling of being in the hammock and noodling on my guitar and just like relaxing. And I mean, I think that sort of epitomizes what this whole endeavor is about.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm. And I will say, Darren, one of the favorite little pieces of the record is you blowing on the empty beer bottle at the end on Nani Wahini. I love that. And I remember he came back to me. He's like, well, you probably want to cut that out. And I'm like, no, this is the perfect ending. Cause you can just imagine that, like, the afternoon's starting to kick in, you're hammered, and all you got is an empty beer bottle. So you just sit there at the ocean.
Well, that wasn't the real reason behind it, but it was supposed to be more like, you know, with the sound effects of the waves crashing, and it was supposed to be this freighter in the distance, you know, passing by.
Oh man, you gotta do the island. The conch shell.
Well, yeah, the conch shell.
I didn't have one at the time, so I had a beer bottle for something.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Just yes.
Yeah, I wish I had that one.
I have one. Should I bring it to the show?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Bring definitely. It. Hey, have a big one.
Let's start the show with a call to order, you know, right?
Another little like bits and pieces that I really latch onto. Pineapple Paradise, you're picking.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Just that form. Like, that is it, man. I can just listen to that for hours.
What's cool about that, too, is it doesn't really fit in the timing of the song. You know, it's like triplets or something in the regular songs of 4-4. It's kind of weird offset thing. I realize that. But it works. I don't know.
It works really well.
I like the your narration, Mark, at the beginning. And it segues right into Tears for the Island. I think Tears for the Island should still be the first song. It's a nice song to get warmed up on and just
It is. I have been trying to figure out, should we take the recording of just that and use that at the very beginning?
I thought about that, yeah.
It's not a bad idea. You know, it's funny, when we came up with that idea, it was like, it's just a joke at first. It's like, because I said, you know, maybe we should just, I don't know how we came up with that, but we were talking.
Yes, it was great. This
radio announcer thing, you know, on a radio.
And the artwork is great, too. We need to give her credit.
Oh, let's give some credit to our Australian artist.
Yes. I. You know what? I'm glad you said that, because I completely forgot to mention that. 50sVintageDame.com.
50sVintageDame.
Her name is Sue, and she's from Australia, and she did a phenomenal job on the artwork, because you know, I toyed around with different artwork and I hated it. And then I thought, wow, something really old that looks almost like a old Trader Vic's cover.
Yes, it's perfect.
And she came back with the concept and I'm like, don't change it.
Yeah, it's a great album cover with really cool vintage artwork. And I think there might be some Maite glasses possibly in the works.
Right. And some shirts.
And some shirts. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Okay. So let's merch it up. So we're doing the LP, which is going to be 180 gram virgin vinyl. So it's extra thick. Yep. And we are going to do the flash drive. So those of you who remember my record, who might remember the little flash drives in the case, we're going to do those. So we're going to have four extra tracks. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a copy of this on there. We're going to have music videos.
Yeah.
So, you know, not just the tracks. So you'll be
It's a really cool bamboo case that has this really neat bamboo drive in it with laser engraved.
You can get completely bamboozled.
Bamboozled. Exactly. And we've decided
it's a value. It's a great deal.
And we've all kind of decided that, hey, Midday Mai Tais deserves a Mai Tai glass. So we're going to have Mai Tai glass.
Absolutely, yes.
With the artwork. And it's going to be really...
It's 12 o'clock somewhere.
It's 12 o'clock somewhere. Hey, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. We can amp that up by 5 hours.
Because we're into day drinking, baby.
That's right. So... So thank you guys so much for coming on. And I want to say, for me personally, thank you for being a part of this project. It has been an honor for me to be part of this project and to work with you guys. And I listen to the tracks and I'm blown away by them.
Oh, cool.
It's a great album. I really love it.
More to come.
I appreciate you guys inviting me.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you guys. Mike Young, thank you. For Mr. Moai and the Tiki Heads, Darren Long from the Tiki Delights, and of course, Jeremy DeHart, also Connie Manakura, a.k.a. From the Manakuras and the Aqualads, and what was the other one? You said there was another band you mentioned?
Oh, Lord, there's like 40 more.
There you go.
Amen was another one, you know.
Lords of Atlantis.
Love that name. That is a cool name.
Yeah, Lords of Atlantis. That should have been, like, cut that out, Mark, and just just say Lords of Atlantis.
Okay, there you go.
Elsie Vaughn would get pissed off at me.
There you go. So, aloha to you guys. I want to thank you for coming on the show, and I am my Mai Tai here.
Empty.
So we have come to the end of another visit at the Quiet Village, and I want to thank all the listeners for coming and listening and enjoying this. And I want to remind you, you can, starting May 1st, 2025, you can go to digitiki.com, where you can get this album that we're talking about. You can get the Mai Tai glasses. You can even get a a t-shirt, because you got to buy the shirt.
Flash drive.
You can get the flash drive and you can get the LP from Digitiki.com. And for those of you who are going to be at Tiki Caliente May 1st, 2025, we will all be there debuting it live on stage, which I'm so excited about. A little nervous because I'm practicing everything, but
8 p.m. Thursday,
8 p.m.
May 1st.
Palm Springs. You got it. So thank you guys for coming on. Aloha, everybody.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Okay. And I'm going to close out. I'm going to close the show with the two slowest songs. I'm going to play Lonely Beach. And then we're going to close out with Nani Wahine, because that is just the perfect last song, because we fade off in our drunken stupor from the day.
Cheers to Darren.
Cheers, Darren.
Darren.
Mike, Jeremy.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Aloha. Actually,
as they say, hippa hippa. Hippa hippa.
Hippa hippa. Okay. Hippa hippa. All right.